to Fancy Town Crimes Podcast, a podcast about crimes in fancy towns told by middle-class broads.
All right. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, guys.
This is Megan.
And this is Taylor.
And in light of everything that has happened in the last week and a half, 2 weeks, I think, when this finally comes out, we decided for today we're going to switch up the format a little bit of Fancy Town Crimes.
Yeah, absolutely. We are definitely
feeling, you know, saddened and
frustrated by the state of the world and want to show our support and allyship in any way that we can. So yeah, we're gonna
we're taking a break from Fancy Towns today. We're definitely taking
though,
a break from
though
those.
The crime that I'm focusing on apparently is in a relatively fancy town.
Oh,
ironically,
all right. So it's a little true to form.
It's a little true to form. I did a quick Google search and I was like, that, and I'll explain more because it actually plays into the case itself. But yeah, so go ahead and tell us a little bit about your sister's connections and what we're going to focus on today.
So I'm sure most people don't know this, but for the few people who do know me really well, know that my sister went to a very progressive college and learned a lot about creating grassroots organizations. And, you know, she's very in tune with what's happening right now as far as what the movements need, how things are going to change. So we've definitely been consulting her a lot. And, you know, we've decided that we are going to do the best that we can to use the privilege that we have to try and change things and, you know, bring awareness to what people of color are struggling with right now and hopefully see a big change in the near future. But my sister has her old roommate, is a woman of color, and she runs this organization called Sisters Unchained, which is a really cool organization. It's for young women of color in Boston whose parents either are currently incarcerated or have been incarcerated. And the whole goal of the organization is to, you know, provide healing and support for those women and young girls. And it's also importantly to defund prisons as well, you know, kind of getting rid of that whole private prison, bringing awareness to the fact that there are significantly higher rates of people of color that are detained than, you know, white people being detained. So we have decided that for the entire month of June and what we have previously made as well, whatever we make for this podcast, we are going to be donating to that organization. And it's run by a really fantastic person and I'm sure a group of people behind her. So if you have the means to, or, you know, are looking for a place to donate, if you're in Boston where you want to support Boston specifically and women of color in Boston, this is a great organization to do so, which is why we are, you know, getting behind it and going to try and do our part. So it's Sisters Unchained, and we will most definitely be providing the link to the website on Instagram. We'll put it in our bio. And we will also be putting the link in the show notes as well. So I really encourage everybody to go and take a peek at it if you can and spread the word.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if it's just a, you know, a small thing that we can do and get out on our platform, we just want to do something. It feels like you just have to take action. It's so...
You know, I read somewhere that this was the largest civil rights movement ever.
I read that too. It was,
which is pretty incredible.
All 50 states, 18 countries. 18 countries. That's amazing. Like that is like so powerful and
I mean, truthfully, it's sad in 2020 that we are still dealing with this.
I know. I know. It's like, and you think, like, you always, you're like, oh, we, like, keep being like, we're moving forward. It's like, no, we're not.
I mean, I said
never
this,
mind.
I said this before in our message that we sent out on Monday or last week, at this point now, but I think a lot of people are ignorant to what racism actually is today. I know for a long time I was, because again, growing up in New Hampshire, where I graduated with 800 kids and three of them were people of color, two of them happened to be twins, I thought racism was in the history books. Had no clue until I started teaching in different communities with more diversity that I was like, oh, wow. So it's, I'm hoping that with this, it's, people are going to start to actually understand what the Black Lives Matter movement is, why it's important, why the whole All Lives Matter thing doesn't make sense. I've seen a lot of really great, you know, graphics on that. And so I'm super hopeful that, you know, people are going to be finally properly educated on what this actually is.
Absolutely. I think the, all of the information and resources that are currently out there really circulating in a heavy way over this last week with everything going on, for people who weren't aware of the systemic racism in our country, and even for those who were, but not as well educated as they could be. I mean, I think you can always be educating yourself on this, because especially if you're not literally living it every day, it's it's easy to just be like, oh no, everything's fine, but it's not, it's totally not fine. There's a really good, so Michael Che from Saturday Night Live, he did a stand-up act, where he is talking about Black Lives Matter. And sometimes after I've been just digging into resources for so long, and I'm just like so saddened by humanity, I will turn to a comedian or someone like that who is talking about these topics, because I find that they almost explain it in a way, through their humor, that really gets to the heart of the issue. Because it's one of those things where I feel like I'm always saying, if you're not laughing, crying. And so it is. So anyway, I recommend that you, I think I had put it out on my Instagram. It's probably in the, I have a highlight saved for, resources for the Black Lives Matter movement and just everything that's going on. But it's really good. And it just talks about, you know, what we want as a society. So there's so much. I feel like I don't even have like adequate words to describe how I, how I feel, but it's not about me. So, fine.
I know it's,
that's fine.
And I read somewhere else too, that, you know, talked about being an ally means you are going to mess up, because, and it's true, like, I'm never going to be able to understand what it's like to be a person. I'm never going to be able to understand it, you know, and I'm going to probably not recognize all of the, you know, signs of racism or know what to do in an instance. But I thought there was a really powerful message going out, or that was circulating, about how you're gonna make mistakes as an ally. The most important thing is to continually learn, which is so true. Being open and not just, you know, brushing somebody off, which you know, I'm hoping now in 2020 we don't brush anybody off for any of their feelings regardless. But, you know, especially when it comes to instances of racism, I've obviously never experienced any, so I don't always see the signs of it. You know, and accepting that, I think, is a huge thing too.
Yeah. And having conversations with your family and friends who maybe you've never talked to about racism before. That's definitely not an easy thing. But it's a necessary thing, and it's until there is no racism, we need to be talking about it. And even once there is, we can't forget, you know, we can't forget any of the stuff that's happened. So, anyway.
So, one of the best ways to not forget is to bring up cold cases. Or not, you're not doing a cold case. You're doing an unsolved case, correct?
Yeah, it's technically a quote-unquote closed case, but it's highly suspicious, to put it lightly. So, yeah. So, I am covering a case today. It actually has been circulating on social media. I've been seeing a few cases that have kind of popped up of just, you know, people of color whose cases haven't really been taken seriously. And this one I thought was just so strange. And so I really wanted to talk about it. And part of the thing that's really strange about it is it received like no mainstream media. So when I was looking up articles and details on this death, I was using resources that I am not personally familiar with, and a lot of them had opinions in them that I was like, this isn't just like straight reporting of the news. So I tried to take out the opinions because that's not, you know, helpful.
Right.
But I found some resources that were more local. So WSB Atlanta, and then there was a very long description of everything that had happened on Snopes, which I'm not familiar with as a news source, so take that with a grain of salt. But anyway, I'll go ahead and dive into this this very odd case. So it takes place in Cumming, Georgia, which is in I actually didn't write down the county here, but the county in which it takes place in Georgia actually has a long history of just racism, basically, to put it in one word. And they've seen an interesting increase in the last couple decades of wealth moving into the area, which I think is fascinating when it comes to this case. I think the median income is around $103,000, which, I mean, that's pretty significant in this area of the country.
That would qualify as one of our fancy towns for sure.
It would. I just actually, out of curiosity, happened to look it up, and I was like, I wonder if this plays into it, because you might be familiar with this. You might have seen this on social media. So here we go. So on the evening of November 3rd, 2018, a group of women gathered at the home of a woman, I won't say her name, in Cumming, Georgia to celebrate her 45th birthday. The plan was to watch the LSU Tigers play Alabama Crimson Tide and have a pajama party / swimming party with drinks and appetizers. So, like, an adult slumber party, essentially.
A girl's night.
Exactly. Girl's night. So, the homeowner's boyfriend hung out in the basement watching football games with the husband of another woman who was at the party. And at halftime, the two men came upstairs and were mingling with the girls, the women there that were there. So the guests began to trickle out of the party, trickle into the party around 7 p.m. And around 8:30 p.m., Tamala Horsford arrived. So interviews with the police indicate that many of the partygoers had never met her before, but the homeowner knew her because her sons played football together. So you might have seen this circulating as like a football mother's sleepover or something. That's been kind of the tagline that's been attached to it. So Tamala brought a bottle of tequila as a present for the birthday, but ended up drinking from it herself because the homeowner told her she wasn't a tequila drinker, which, cool, go tequila. According to the interviews and statements given by the partygoers, the night seemed to have been a great success. So the woman, they ate, they They drank, they ate a pot of gumbo and snacks, and they had a good time. There's videos that you can find on the internet that show Tamala and the other guests sitting on the couch playing Cards Against Humanity and laughing, singing Happy Birthday. She was wearing a cute little white pajama onesie with great paws on it, and smiling and laughing and having a grand old time. She was also a mother of five. So she was just out for a fun girls' night.
So she needed a night out for sure.
Yeah, exactly. She was like, girl, give me that tequila because it's been a long day. It's been a long everything. So something that I don't think I've actually called out here. So Tamala was a woman of color, and everyone else at the party was white.
Mm-hmm.
Just for context. So Tamala was especially social, and several of the other partygoers noticed how talkative and friendly she was. They say she was in a great mood. She was dancing, talking to everybody. She engaged with everyone. And she had, you know, a really great personality. So Tamala talked about her family often and with great pride. And at one point in the night, she FaceTimed with her stepdaughter, who was expecting a child, and expressed considerable excitement around the arrival of the new baby. So throughout the night, Tamala went out to the first floor deck to smoke cigarettes and marijuana. Many of the women consumed quite a bit of alcohol that night. As the evening wound down, some of the women headed home, or they were picked up by rides. Others went to bed in various rooms around the house. Tamala had planned to stay the night and sleep in one of the rooms. Mm-hmm. She was keen to hang out and socialize as long as she could. So shortly before 2 a.m., one of the partygoers was picked up by her husband, and the woman said that Tamala saw her off and was left eating a bowl of gumbo as the last one who was awake in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's the next morning. So the homeowner's aunt lived at the house and attended the birthday party, but she retired early. At about halftime in the LSU game, she went downstairs to her basement bedroom, took a bath, went to bed. The next morning, she got up around 8:45 a.m. and went to make coffee when she saw a disturbing sight from the basement window. So she told police, I was just staring out the window and I saw these Dalmatian pajamas, so I didn't start the coffee. I got my knees and said a prayer, and then I ran outside. The aunt woke up the homeowner and her boyfriend, who came outside and found Tamala laying face down in the backyard. So at 8:59 a.m., the homeowner called 911 and asked for an ambulance. So that was only, it was, you know, about a little over 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later. So
wait, they found her at what time?
They found her at 8:40. She saw her out the window at 8:45. And then called 911 at 8:59.
So that's like 15 minutes.
Yeah, so like 15 minutes. So not a crazy amount of time. Seems like a little bit of time. But I don't know
that I would stop and necessarily pray and then go look.
There would be no stopping and praying. I think there would be a stopping, running to the backyard and immediately calling 911. I don't think I would have. I mean, but who's to say what someone would do in this situation?
True.
I don't know, of course, but.
True.
But yeah, no, I agree.
It is interesting to me that the woman immediately realized it was pajamas, like, out her window. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I would have, I think you, because you're, if you weren't expecting to see something out your window, I think you usually, like, your mind creates something different in your head. You're mm-hmm. like, oh, it's like a blanket or something, you know?
So, all right, anyway, sorry, continue.
No worries. So 2 days later, on November 6th, the Georgia Georgia Bureau of Investigations medical examiner performed an autopsy on her. It revealed several injuries of the head, neck, and torso, including bleeding in the space between the brain and the skull, bleeding between the brain and the membrane that surrounds the brain, broken neck vertebra, and a laceration of the heart. Other injuries included abrasions of the face, left arm, left hand, and left leg, lacerations of the right wrist and right leg, a dislocation of the right wrist. The observed injuries are consistent with those received in a fall. So in light of the autopsy findings, the investigative information, the case of the death is multiple blunt force injuries, and the manner of death was considered an accident. So basically what they're saying happened is that she fell off the balcony, which was 10 or 15 feet off of the ground, and died.
Would you die from that height?
That's something I was wondering. That doesn't seem that high to me, but
I mean, that had to have been face first if you fell.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's all her upper body that was really.
Yep. Yeah, there's only some, like, abrasions on her left leg.
I have nothing never else. Heard of somebody falling, like, nosedive.
Yeah, it's a very, like, you know, and there were lots of times in here where it talked about like how drunk she was, like they did some toxicology reports,
but also I don't know, isn't there something about like usually when people are drunk drivers, it's the people who are sober that get more injured than the drunk people,
because like your body's more relaxed or whatever. And she also was apparently smoking marijuana too, so they found alcohol, marijuana, and then Xanax in her system. Mm-hmm. And there were no other drugs or anything. So it was just those things. I don't know. Honestly, though,
the thing is, like, when you take a lot of depressants like that, like alcohol, Xanax, and weed, I mean, I've heard of people dying from that before, but it's always been respiratory failure because their system slows down so much.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I feel like you're more likely to die from your body just shuts down because you have so many depressants in your system. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. So something else I'll say here in another article I read, it said that when the investigators first came on the scene, so she was on the patio. She was found face down on the patio. So, they assumed that she actually, it sounded like, tripped on the patio, fell face down, and died. But then after having conversations with the medical examiner, they were like, oh, no, like, she probably fell from the balcony. I don't know. I thought that was a weird, I read that, and I was like,
Why would that be your immediate thing to think of? I agree.
I don't know. I just thought it was strange. So this autopsy report came out November 6th, which was 3 days after she, 2 days after she was found dead. Mm-hmm. The autopsy report was finalized on February 5th, 2019, so a few months later. And 2 weeks later, the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office officially closed their investigation into her death, writing in a memo. The injuries sustained were deemed to be consistent with those received in a fall. No evidence of injury patterns indicative of any assault or foul play were noted by sheriff's detectives or in the coroner's or state of Georgia medical examiner's reports. Exhaustive interviews with multiple witnesses, family, and neighbors were conducted by sheriff's detectives throughout the investigation. At conclusion, no evidence of criminal activity has been discovered in this investigation. So, they said that nothing in the interview transcripts they reviewed suggested that anyone in the house that night had any sort of grievance against Tamla, nor did any, nor were there any disagreements or disputes that took place. And many of the partygoers actually were struck with her personality, which appeared to be extraordinary, describing her as sweet and fun and super friendly and warm. So Tamala's husband later gave a description of her. He said, "She had the biggest heart on this planet. There's people all over the world right now that are mourning for this young lady." So the internet since this, has been rifled with alternative theories since November 2018. Mm-hmm. So,
and that was the year it happened, right? 2018.
That was the year that it happened. Yep. Okay. So a few months before 2019. So a lot of people think that she was murdered. So the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office has been accused of coordinating a cover-up. The fact that she was the only person of color at the party has been used by some to claim that potentially it was racially motivated. And there was at one point a discrepancy in the timing in which her body was found and when they called 911. So this was interesting. So in some articles, it said that she was actually found at 7:30 a.m. and that the police weren't called until, you know, 8:45, 9 o'clock, which would have been a really long period of time, like an hour mm-hmm. and a half to have not called. However, the detectives say, like, no, that timing was wrong. She was actually found at, you know, 8:30 and called at 8:45 or whatever that time frame was, or 8:45 and 8:59. I don't know why that discrepancy exists. That's unclear to me. I couldn't find a lot of information because there really isn't that much information. So the big oddity about this here, in my opinion, is this piece. So the homeowner's boyfriend, his name was Jose, or is Jose. So until December 2018, he was a probation officer for Forsyth County. Mm-hmm. And he used his position to access confidential files related to the investigation on Tamala's death. Mm-hmm. This fact was cited by cited as potentially part of a cover-up. I don't have written down here, but he was then let go from the department after they found this out. Some people were saying maybe it was like a morbid fascination. I don't know. It's really pretty strange. So basically the case has been closed by the county as an accidental death. But from everything that I just talked about here and then what I could find, there was a severe lack of coverage to this mm-hmm. case.
Yeah.
I think if it had been a white woman who just like randomly showed up, you know, face down dead in the backyard, like there would have been a lot more time and effort put into it. And it seemed to close pretty, pretty quickly. So there's currently a change.org petition to reopen the case again into Tamala's death.
So there's got to be more that was just never reported, because if there's a significant number of people who think that, like, what does her family think?
Her family and friends think she was murdered.
It just, I mean, the thing that throws me is those are such severe injuries for 15 feet.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, people do stupid stuff all the time and jump from heights. And, like, I could see, like, broken legs and stuff like that for sure. And I could see, like, a pelvic fracture or I just I don't know, how would there only be injuries to her upper body, really? And I know she had, like, some stuff on her legs, but it's not
severe. It's, like, superficial. Yeah. Yeah, it's because, too.
And was there anything, did they say anything about the railing? Because it's not like balconies are just built without a railing.
Well, that was what I was going to say, like, because, like, using physics, right, if you were to fall off of a balcony, off of over a railing, you wouldn't fall just like flat on your face. Like,
you wouldn't swan dive. You'd probably flip over.
Yeah, most likely you might even land on your back.
Yeah,
so I don't know. And some of the abrasions on her leg, they said had to do with, it's a problem with, like, not having a bunch of sources, because it's, like, it's, mm-hmm. the information is so wonky. But the way that I read it, anyway, was that, you know, like, the way that, like, a barrier would be around some bushes and stuff, like, a pretty low one, that was what had, you know, they had seen a mark on her, and that was from that, which is part of what made them think that she just, like, fell on the patio.
I mean, that makes no freaking sense. The woman is not 95 years old. Like, give me a break. Yeah, I can't believe they published that. Like,
she's like 40 or something. Yeah. So, there's just a lot of, like, there's not a lot of good information, which is, like, a big part of this problem. Like, it was not covered really well. It obviously, it was, I think, assumed it was an accident right out the gate, and I think that's the big problem. The family has, as of 2019, they did try and do a private, autopsy report to see if they could, you know, get any additional details, but they haven't released any information about it yet. So this is still kind of evolving. So it's a really good time to get this case reopened, because there's a lot of people who are talking about it now, and mm-hmm. I think there's still some additional details. There also was one video article that I didn't include in this because I couldn't get a lot of good information on it, but she has one friend who's very outspoken on her death, and that it was not an accident. And the other women who were at the party are basically suing for
defamation,
thank you. So she needed to turn into the county thumb drive, essentially, of all of her social media postings, and that mysteriously went missing from the county, and so that turned into a big thing, because they were like, where did this go? So it wasn't handled well, let's say.
My other thing is, I don't know, the aunt, like, first of all, if you're, like, groggy in the morning, right, and I'm not saying the aunt did it or anything, but,
sure,
like,
sure.
If you're groggy in the morning and you look out the basement window and you immediately recognize somebody as wearing Dalmatian pajamas, that just is weird to me, because I can imagine looking out the window and being like, what the fuck is that? You know what I mean? Like, and looking totally. And being like, I don't know. And then, I mean, honestly, I would believe her more if she was like, I saw something weird out the window. Because I'm assuming it's not a big window. It's a basement.
Yeah.
You know, her story would carry more credibility with me if she was like, I didn't know. I just, like, saw something and assumed it was trash or somebody had thrown something.
Yeah.
But the fact that she immediately was like, oh, I immediately saw, and then I prayed, it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Why? What the fuck? Like, no.
She could have still been alive.
Exactly. Why would you just go and pray? And then on top of it, you then waste more time running up to the homeowner, bringing everybody back down.
Just go outside and call 911.
15 minutes is a long time, because there have been other cases where there's been discrepancies of, like, 10 minutes between the time that the person supposedly died and the call going out that gets, like, heavily scrutinized.
I mean, it feels like a really long time. Like, how long does it take for you to get to, like,
shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, think about all the crime shows that we've watched endlessly. There's always, that is scrutinized very often, how long it takes.
Yeah.
To call.
And they kind of gloss over it. Like, I also saw a transcript of part of the 911 call. It was a little weird. So this was one of the other things that they're saying in the petition as well. So the lead investigator was apparently friends with Jose. Yeah, which, like, oh, good. So the lead investigator was a personal friend of the sheriff, who was hired after the sheriff was elected. And the lead investigator had no prior police experience, but was hired in at a higher position, basically bypassing the Forsyth County new, like, hiring protocol. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but that is something that's being alleged.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's true, then that's
ridiculous.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find part of the transcript of the 911 call. It was a little, I'll say it was just kind of odd. I just thought the words that they used were a little strange. But like we say, like you always say, like, you never know,
right,
what someone's going to say or do in that situation.
I can even see not wanting to scrutinize the 911 call, because who knows what I would say. But the thing that gets me is that, I mean, the 15 minutes, I don't know, the 15 minutes is weird to me. That's really, really weird.
Yeah. So the homeowner said, in part of the 911 call, we had people over last night. We were drinking. Most of us went to bed. One of them stayed on the balcony. She was drinking. And we just went outside, and she's laying face down in the backyard. It looks like, maybe, I'm guessing, she fell off the balcony, but she's stiff. And then the dispatcher was like, okay, is she breathing? And then the homeowner says, I don't know, but she's face down. So then the homeowner became distressed and passed the phone to Jose. And Jose said, she's not moving one bit. She is not breathing. She's completely face down in the yard. She is stiff.
Ugh.
So I don't know. And
did the autopsy, like, did they ever say, like, when they thought the time of death was?
I couldn't find anything about that. Let me see if I can pull up the, oops.
You're right. The weird thing is that there's no information.
There's no information. Like, so obviously it wasn't, like, it wasn't, let's see if there's time of death on here.
Because I'm even trying to wrap my brain and be like, if this truly was an open and shut case of somebody falling.
Yeah.
Don't they usually have times, though? I don't know. Maybe they don't report it. Maybe that's just something, if it's like they really believe it's a murder case and they don't even talk about it until, like, the crime is in trial and everything. I don't know.
So. This is the, so here's the summary on the, like, official report. So the descendant is a 40-year-old woman. She was last known to be alive shortly after midnight. At the time, she was drinking heavily at a party in a residence. The next morning, she was discovered unresponsive in the backyard under a deck that is approximately 10 to 15 feet high from the ground. It appears she may have fallen from the deck. She was pronounced dead without attempted resuscitation. And I don't see anything about time of death yet, anyway.
I don't know. Like I said before, like, I would believe it more if, you know, it was, like, respiratory failure or something like that. But I don't know. Like, when you're, I don't know. And we've all been there. We've all been, you know, having had a lot to drink and, you know, it's late at night. She's tired. Never, I don't know. It just, it doesn't make sense to me, you know, because yeah. also too. Okay. Let's play devil's advocate and say that maybe it was that she was that intoxicated and she had been, you know, smoking and whatnot. Wouldn't you be really unsteady on your feet?
Yeah, totally.
Like, you don't just walk up to a railing and then fall over it. Like, she would have been falling down on the deck and then falling in the house. And then, I mean, and she yeah. saw somebody off at 2 a.m. who's saying that she was, like,
she was eating, you know, some gumbo.
Eating. She wasn't so incapacitated that she was, like, passed out or anything, you know?
No, she obviously was, like, she could eat. She could, you know, see someone off. And so at, so 2 a.m., so then that's 6 hours before she was found. And every, she was the last person awake.
And if she still has high levels of, you know, whatever in her system, then that means that she must not have died that much later because it would have metabolized in her body.
Yeah, good point.
Like, she wouldn't have such high levels. So she must have died not too much longer after.
Yeah, at the very least, I think there needs to be more independent investigation. At the very, mm-hmm. very least. Even if, you know, let's say it was actually an accident, you know, then there at least needs to be more investigation. It just doesn't feel like there's been enough investigation. So,
yeah.
So anyway, so that is the very strange death of Tamala Horsford. So I would definitely suggest doing your research into this. I will put the link to the change.org petition in the show notes and on Instagram. I mean, I think at the very least it should be reopened. It was closed real fast. So yeah, that's my tale for today.
Well, thanks for that.
Yeah. Hopefully that is helpful.
Those poor kids, honestly.
Oh, I know, right?
Well, so today, I know we usually end with like a light note, but it just, again, doesn't really feel appropriate. So what I've decided to do for today in place of kind of the lighter note is we're going to talk about some unsolved homicides in Boston, because that's our community where we're from. And, you know, I was kind of like racking my brain about what I wanted to do for my segment, and this just kind of seemed, you know, appropriate. And kind of piggybacking off of what you said about the little information, so first of almost all of Boston's unsolved homicides, which they have on their website, they only have 2014, 2015 from what I've found, but it's majority people of color. In most of the, you know, deaths, murders have happened in like Dorchester, Mattapan area. So that was kind of unfortunately unsurprising to see, but
yeah,
there's also not a ton of information about these unsolved homicides either. So maybe just getting the word out there, somebody knows something, and hopefully these can be solved. So the first person that we're going to talk about is Siobhan Tucker. And the information that I have for her, this is directly off of the BPD website, BPD News. And it says, at about 5:22 a.m. Saturday, November 1st, 2014, officers from the District D4 South End responded to a radio call for shots fired in the area of 601 Shamit Ave. While en route to the call, officers were notified that the incident had been reclassified from shots fired to a person shot in the area of 18 Lattimore Court. On arrival, officers located a female victim believed to be in her 30s, suffering from what appeared to be gunshot wounds. The victim suffering
from life-threatening injuries was transported to Boston Medical Center, where she was later pronounced deceased. The Boston Police Homicide Unit is actively investigating these facts and circumstances surrounding the incident. Anyone with information is encouraged to call homicide detectives at 617-343-4470. And then they also have a Crime Stoppers tip line at 1-800-494-TIPS, or just text the word tip to crime. So that's essentially all of the information about her and about her murder. Yeah, there's...
Talk about lack of information.
Mm-hmm. And then there is Raheem Robertson. And so this was October 4th, 2014, that there was this update. But it says at about 7:16 p.m. on Monday, September 29th, 2014, officers from District B2, Roxbury, responded to a radio call for a person shot in the area of 564 Dudley Street, Roxbury. On arrival, officers observed a male victim outside the location, above location, suffering from an apparent gunshot wound. The victim, suffering from life-threatening injuries, was transported to Boston Medical Center, where he was later pronounced deceased. The victim has been identified as 21-year-old Raheem Robertson of Boston. And then the number and the tip line are the same, and I'll say it again after I do the third person. But it's essentially, if you have information, you can call in the exact same place. And then the last unsolved crime that we're going to talk about today is Corey Ragland. So, okay. This most recent update was from July 2nd, 2014. At about 2:07 p.m. on Monday, June 30th, 2014, officers from District E18, Hyde Park, responded to a radio call for a person shot in the area of 73 Edgewater Drive, Mattapan. On arrival, officers observed a male victim suffering from apparent gunshot wounds. The victim was transported to Boston Medical Center, where he was later pronounced deceased. The victim has been identified as 36-year-old Corey Ragland of Mattapan. And then, just like before, if you have any information, you're asked to call the Boston Police Homicide Unit at 617-343-4470, or they have the Crime Stoppers tip line at 1-800-494-TIPS, or by texting the word TIP to crime. And it says the Boston Police Department will stringently guard and protect the identities of those who wish to help this investigation in an anonymous manner. So those are the three that we're covering for today. And sadly, there's like super minimal information about each one of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they are from a while ago. They are from 6 years ago, because it's 2020 now, 2014. They are from a while ago.
Crazy. But,
sad.
Well, I know that in the last day or so, I feel like all the days are blurring together, so I don't know which day this came out, but Mayor Marty Walsh was talking about some reforms that he's working on in the city of Boston for the police department. So, baby steps, but we should keep pushing the city to focus on reforming, defunding the police force, and focusing on bringing justice to these crimes against people of color. So just keep pushing. And then also, while you're pushing, also take some time for yourself and maybe do a face mask for like 15 minutes in between, reading articles and protesting, and because taking care of you is important too. So it's a lot.
It's heavy now, but hopefully we can go somewhere progressive from this really, tragic point that we're at right now.
Totally. I mean, I hope, I'm like hoping beyond hope, that this is going to be in the history books regardless. Everything that's going on, this 2020 you know, this year, everything that has happened has been so, everyone's been using the word unprecedented, and I keep saying stop saying unprecedented because it's just so much. Yeah. But it is, it all is, you know, it's been so much. But so this, I'm hopeful that we can look back on this time years and years from now and be like, we all came together and really, really, really made a difference and saw change and saw movement in the right direction. And we all became a lot more aware of everything that we're doing in everyday life. There were mm-hmm. a lot of really great articles about things that you can literally start doing right now to change just everything that you're doing in your life. Yep. I don't know if I mentioned this in our discussion we had last week, but like, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to be buying my future daughter books about like how to be an ally and
yeah.
how to, you know, bypass any systematic racism. Like, so like, even just like things like that, that I, you know, that maybe didn't cross my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm buying her books. I need to buy her books about this. Like, how do we educate the next generation about things that we weren't educated on when we were their age?
Yeah,
so
exactly. Yeah.
There's lots of places you can do it. Lots of ways that you can educate yourself. The resources are out there. Stay aware, stay active. This isn't just going to be over, you know, when protests end. Like it's, mm-hmm. it's, we still have to keep this top of mind and be taking action every single day to actually see change. So yeah, so that was today's episode. Stay learning, yeah. Always learning. Going forward, we're going to, you know, do some of our normal segments, but we want to start off those segments by doing a piece about a person of color at the beginning of each podcast. Because we feel it's really important to not just end this conversation now, like, oh yeah, we've done 2 weeks worth of content and now we're done. Like, okay, we've done our job. Like, cause that's what we don't want to see happen. No, we don't. Yeah. We don't want to see that happen. We want to keep the conversation open and we want to keep people thinking about it and top of mind. So
that's our plan our plan is to continue to cover, especially cold cases involving people of color. But if you have any, again, we love suggestions. If yes. you have any that you feel that we should cover that are important to you, please, 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 by all means, send them in. We're yes. more than happy to promote what, you know, you guys feel is important to promote. So
absolutely,
that's what we're gonna do.
Yep. Cold cases, like untalked, like cases that aren't talked about, like Tamala's case, you know, cases that just don't have a lot of information. They haven't been investigated, you know, all that good stuff. Just anything that you feel is important, send it to us and we'll talk about it.
In the meantime, thanks for listening. And again, check out the Sisters Unchained. Listen. Tell other people to listen because we think this is important. And, you know, everything that we earn, we are going to be sending over to them to make sure that they have enough money to do the good things that they need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we said, we have all these resources will be in the show notes. We'll continue to post resources on our Instagram. But stay safe, everyone, and stay healthy. And take care of yourselves, and we appreciate you. And thanks for listening.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate and subscribe. See you next time.